Good afternoon. Council ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Introductions?
I just have a minute, Your Honor. Let me do it now.
Now, please.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele. Justice, this is Michael Kelly on behalf of the athlete with Donald's Corp. I have seated here Sean Burke and Michael Banks, both admitted pro hoc in the firm of Morgan Lewis, both members of the Pennsylvania Bar. Mr. Banks will be doing the argument.
You introduce both?
Yes. Sean Burke, but Mr. Banks will be doing... They both have been admitted pro hoc already, Your Honor, but Mr. Banks, with the court's permission, would do the argument.
Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of our Delaware Supreme Court, if it would please the court, my name is John Weaver, and I represent Susan Rizzitello. She was a 20-year employee of the McDonald's Corporation, the one that serves the hamburgers. This is an employment case where we have brought it against McDonald's, who and my case was terminated in the court below by losing a summary judgment motion acted on by the court below. The facts began in 1997, where my client was asked to be a manager of the McDonald's store on Kirkwood Highway, known as the Price's Corner store. Her supervisor, which the court below referred to as Jane Doe, made statements that she would have Susan Rizzitello fired. Susan Rizzitello complained to Human Resources and got no response. While Susan Rizzitello was on vacation in December of 1997, the supervisor, Jane Doe, went into the store and changed figures at the store. It was witnessed by a Victoria Haslam, who stated that she saw the figures being changed and that the purpose of the changing, according to Jane Doe, was to see that Susan Rizzitello was fired. Susan Rizzitello, when she returned, was locked out of her computer. She could not check the figures on her own, could not do any of her own research, and again asked Human Resources for help. A meeting was arranged, and instead of listening to her complaints, a Human Resources individual suspended her indefinitely, said that this would go on your record, you will never be promoted, you should leave. To that, and you'll find in my appendix, Susan Rizzitello did write a resignation letter where she stated that she was not happy at all with the way that she had been treated by McDonald's. The two remaining issues that were decided by that summary judgment by the court below had to do with the breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. There were two counts that my client had. The first count was that that covenant was breached because of racial discrimination. And the second count was that the covenant was breached because of falsification of records. The court below in its opinion said, it is clear that both a falsification and a termination must be present to support a claim for breach of the covenant. It seems that the court below is stating that my client had to have received either what is commonly called a pink slip or had somebody stand in front of her and say, you are fired. Obviously, she did not do that. She did hand in her own written resignation. In the court below, we made two arguments. The first argument that I made was that those words or that pink slip is not required. The second argument I made was that there was, in fact, a termination. It was a constructive termination because of the way that she had been treated. The court below rejected both of those arguments, I'm here to make them to this court. Specifically, the court below stated, with regard to the racial discrimination claim, quote, the court further finds that disparate treatment claim must also fall. Rizzitello resigned before McDonald's took any action against her, other than she was told to leave pending an investigation. With regard to the falsification of records claim, the court says, quote, there is a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the records were falsified, but then goes on to say that that's mooted by the fact that she resigned as opposed to being fired. I'm here because obviously I disagree with what the court below did, and there are three cases that I would wish this court to consider, and I believe that if they are considered, that you would grant my request that the decision would be reversed. The first case that I'd like this court to consider is Merrill versus Prolong American Inc. When it comes to the breach of covenant and of good faith and fair dealing, at least Justice Walsh believed at that time that this was the preeminent or first case with regard to that issue.
You're aware that when someone's been named, all their opinions are speaking for everyone on the court?
Yes, I do.
So did Justice Walsh write a dissenting or a concurring opinion?
He wrote the opinion for the court, Your Honor.
So why do you say it was Justice Walsh's view only?
He was the one who wrote the opinion. That's why I use that term, Mr. Justice Hall. In the opinion, it states, we therefore hold that every employment contract made under the laws of this state, consonant with general principles of contract law, includes an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. That's found at page 101 of the opinion of the court. The facts of that case are the employee was told that we have a job for you, we'd like to hire you for this position, we want you to work for our company. Secretly, the employer really did not want to retain this employee, and upon hiring him, continued to look for somebody different. The Merrill opinion says, the lodestar here is candor. An employer may not in good faith knowingly allow an employee to assume that the duration of the employment is indefinite when it is in secret contemplation of limited duration.
Was the employee terminated in that case?
Yes, he was. But then the court goes on to say, the covenant of good faith in this context protects employees from receiving under the contract less than what he bargains for. The argument that I would make is that the pink slip or you're fired is not a requirement to be able to make a claim under the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. In fact, if you use the language where it says that consonant with general principles of contract law, we'd have to look to when the breach occurs. And as we read further in that case, the breach clearly occurred when the candor was not tendered. So the breach did not occur when the employee was fired.
Is that what the court said, or is that your interpretation?
Let me quote from the court. The case involves a claim that the employer deceptively induced the employee to enter into an employment contract. The termination of employment merely gave effect to the deception. So I believe that the opinion says that it is the deception that caused the breach, and not the termination itself. And I'd make that argument here before the court. The second case that I believe should be considered is DuPont versus Pressman. I bring that case to the attention of this court because The case involved an individual wherein an employee of DuPont went and falsified the record in an attempt to get him fired. The court in this case clearly stated that, again, it is not the termination that causes the breach, but it is the fact that certain acts were taken to falsify the records. Specifically...
Could I interrupt you for a second?
You may.
Because I'm getting confused. You seem to be focusing on what happened before your client decided to resign.
That is correct.
Okay. And the court, perhaps I'm speaking out of turn here, but at least I have a question that focuses more on what the legal ramifications of the fact that she resigned are. And before you get into it, let me just refer to the trial court's decision that says an employee who resigns rather than being terminated may have a claim for constructive discharge. To show constructive discharge, however, an employee must show the work environment was so intolerable that she had no choice but to resign. And it goes on and says that denial of future promotions is not enough to make a claim for constructive discharge. Do you say that there is anything more than a denial of future promotions that led to her resignation?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Would you kind of spell out what other facts are somewhere in this record as to, I guess you've described the fact that somebody was falsifying her computer records, but is there anything else?
Yes, Your Honor.
Could you tell us what it is?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, it would be found on page 11 of the brief going on to page 12. There are, in my view, a series of events that would create a condition at McDonald's that was so intolerable to Susan Rizzitello that it was constructive termination. The first one that I put out...
Is that the test, that it's so intolerable to her or it's so intolerable to a reasonable person?
I would suggest that it's so intolerable to a reasonable person would be the way I interpret other cases, in particular Lipson versus Anesthesia Services, which I cited in my brief to the court. But if you look at the facts that I'm about to give you, I don't think that any person would do anything but terminate their own employment because of these facts. And again, I point to the fact that she was a 20-year employer. She was placed under a supervisor who, prior to being placed under that supervisor, clearly indicated that she was hated by that supervisor and that supervisor would find a way to fire her. She requested help from human resources and got none. Her supervisor goes into the store and changes figures, gives a positive statement to Victoria Haslam that she's doing that to make sure that Susan Rizzitello is fired. She's locked out of her store computer so she cannot defend herself. And when she asks for help again, instead of sending somebody to help her, somebody is sent to suspend her indefinitely, state that this will go on her record, that she will never get promoted, and that she should leave.
Was there also a change in her work schedule?
There was a change in her work schedule, but, Your Honor, this change had not taken effect by the time that she had terminated her employment. It might have become an issue if she had stayed.
But what I'm getting at is in terms of the facts that you claim were evidence of an intolerable work environment. She had been told, had she not, that her work schedule was being modified in a way that was unsatisfactory to her, that, you know, was kind of, at least allegedly, was a purposeful change to make it less conducive working environment?
In particular, a store manager, which is what Susan Rizzitello was, makes the schedule. Here, a supervisor is going into her store and changing the schedule that she had made. Susan Rizzitello clearly thought that that was a breach of protocol within McDonald's.
As far as changing the figures, was that reported to Human Resources?
Yes.
When was that reported?
That was reported the second time that I referred to. This happened in... She took her vacation between Christmas and New Year's, and she terminated her employment, as my memory, the first week in January. So roughly after getting back from New Year's through the date of her termination, she reported that to Human Resources.
Well, what's wrong if the numbers, for whatever reason, either they've been falsified or maybe there's misconduct of some kind by your client, for the company to sort of, all right, let's just suspend you while we look into this? What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it is that management supervisors are essentially creating false information so that an employee could, I think any employee would look at that and say, what chance do I have? I can't think of any worse situation than somebody going to work and finding that there is another individual over her who is trying to change records for the express purpose of having her fired. I don't know why anybody would want to work there.
Well, does the Human Resources or the corporation have to investigate that, and that would, what the suspension was all about?
And that would be good, except you remember she went to Human Resources when the supervisor was put into place and got no response. She went to Human Resources again, asked for help, but instead of help, somebody coming out and talking with her about her problems, they simply suspended her. And they went further to say, you should leave. Creating an intolerable situation.
I don't want to interrupt your answer to Justice Rizzi's question, but you do realize you're in your rebuttal time.
Do
you wish to reserve the balance or move on?
I could just refer to one more case with regard to the first issue that I brought up, and that is, there's a case of Schuster versus DeCrowley. And as you track all three of those cases, that is Merrill, Pressman, and Schuster, the language that is in all those cases clearly refers to contract as the basis for the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. And so if, in fact, there's a breach of that contract, then my client has a claim and should have survived summary judgment.
Mr. Weaver, just so I'm clear on your argument, you appear to be suggesting that if a hostile workplace environment exists and you haven't been terminated, but it's clearly a hostile environment, and that the logical extension that you want us to take of our prior cases is you have a cause of action for a breach of the covenant of fair dealing if an employer permits a hostile environment to exist. Is that correct?
I would expand it. I would say that here there was a falsification of records, not simply a hostile environment. So, and in Pressman, the court specifically found that the simple falsification of records leads to a claim. I have a claim.
Pressman was terminated, wasn't it?
He was terminated, but
we're,
again,
we're trying to apply our prior holdings to your case, where you have someone who resigned. And in order to somehow get there, we have to extend our prior precedents, and that's what I'm trying to understand. How far do you want us to extend it?
I would argue that you wouldn't be extending it. My client has a claim because of the falsification of records. Pressman says my client has a claim because of the falsification of records. Now, the only issue here is, if there's a falsification of records, my client has a claim, is termination part and parcel with the falsification? I argue no.
Well, you're well into your rebuttal. I would suggest to you that during the other presentation, you think, for the purposes of your rebuttal, not about the facts that might support a cause of action necessarily, but articulate for us exactly what is the cause of action that you believe you should be entitled to go to trial on, because there are disputed facts about that cause. So you have 5.5 minutes reserved.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Chief Justice Steele and members of the court, thank you again for allowing an out-of-stater to appear here today. May it please the court, my name is Michael Banks, and I represent McDonald's in connection with this matter. As this court already knows, the plaintiff has resigned from her employment. There was no dispute about that. The question we submit before this court is whether the circumstances leading to and surrounding the plaintiff's resignation from her employment are consistent with those narrow circumstances that this court has found to support an exception to the employment at will rule. That is, an exception for cases in which there is a breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. It appears from some of the questions from the court, and I don't want to be presumptuous, but I believe the court recognizes that this is a very narrow exception. In the Schuster case and the Pressman case, this court discussed the balance, in fact, that is present in any attempt to craft an exception to the employment at will rule. On the one hand, there's a recognition that certain conduct by employers that may be repugnant should be actionable. Conduct that is violative of public policy, such as terminating a plaintiff, as in the Schuster case, for refusing advances, for resisting sexual harassment. Conduct, as in the Merrill case, to which Mr. Weaver referred, in which a fraud was alleged to have been perpetrated, an individual was misled about the employer's intentions in the terms of employment. Conduct as in the Pressman case, where it was alleged and potentially established at trial, the case was remanded for errors in the jury instructions, but alleged that an individual was terminated in retaliation for conduct for reporting misappropriation by the employer, and that the employer falsified and manipulated documents and information to cause that result.
Aren't there allegations here that the supervisor was putting false information in McDonald's computers? And isn't there one of those same scenarios of reporting that kind of misconduct deserving of protection?
There is, Justice Richards, an allegation, but there is a total absence of evidence to that effect. And if I may address that very briefly, at least, subject to further questions. It is alleged that this Jane Doe, as the court referred to the supervisor, manipulated information in the computer. I submit that if we look back to the Pressman case, the court was very careful there to distinguish between allegations of malice, which was what was erroneously instructed to the jury in that case, and evidence of manipulation, and that's why the case was remanded. Here, there is an allegation that Ms. Doe, the supervisor, tampered with information in the computer. However, the only evidence of record, shows that this supervisor arrived at the end of the month, December of 1997, to conduct a supervisory task that is rather ordinary, that is, performing an end-of-the-month audit, a review of inventory. The very purpose of reviewing inventory at the end of the month is to look for discrepancies, to see how many hamburgers, how many buns, how many pounds of French fries and potatoes there are, and to reconcile those with the existing inventory records in the books. It is a necessary function of that endeavor that when you find discrepancies, you correct them. The only information that the plaintiff has offered in this case in an attempt, a futile attempt, I would submit, to satisfy her burden, is that in the process of that inventory reconciliation, the manager and other made changes in the computer. That's exactly what a computer audit is supposed to be. There's no evidence that supports an inference of wrongdoing besides a suggestion by the plaintiff that this supervisor was hostile to her and did not like her.
Didn't the trial court find that there was a material issue of fact as to the falsification of records? Are you saying that that was an error on the trial court's part?
I am, Justice Berger. I submit that the trial court erred in finding that. I believe this trial court, with all due respect to Judge Scott, made a mistake that was very similar to the mistake in Pressman that led to the case being reversed and remanded.
Well, let's just quickly run through it. We have an allegation that another person witnessed the computer audit, whatever you want to call it, and not only saw numbers being changed, but also heard a comment being made to the effect that I'm going to get this woman fired. You're saying that's no evidence?
I'm saying it's insufficient. In Pressman, just
insufficient for purposes of whether you go to a jury or not?
Yes, I submit that it is.
Well, what is the standard by which you decide whether it's going to go to a jury or not?
In the Pressman case, what this court said is we are not looking at malice, we're looking at actual evidence of falsification and asking whether there is any. That's why that case was reversed. The co-worker, Ms. Haslam, who provided the affidavit and testimony in support of Ms. Rizzitiello's claim, did say that there were changes made in the computer. And she did say that there was evidence of malice, namely that the supervisor, Ms. Doe, did not like the plaintiff, Ms. Rizzitiello. We have not contested that. For the summary judgment record, that there was personal animosity between them. But this was the answer to the question that Ms. Haslam gave when confronted with what we submit is the real issue here on the falsification question. Question. You can't, sitting here today, tell me whether their numbers were right or wrong by the time they left, meaning those who came in to do the audit and end of the month review. The question was, were the numbers right or wrong? The answer was, I have no idea. All Ms. Haslam could say was that they were changing numbers in the computer again, as one would expect in that process. We submit that that doesn't support it.
Why do you change numbers again if you're not manipulating them?
Well, because that's what an inventory audit or reconciliation is, Justice Richards. If you go in and you're checking the inventory, the hamburgers or the French fries or whatever napkins or supplies are there, there's a recount every month. In fact, what Ms. Rizzitiello said in her affidavit in support of her position is that food cost issues, as they're called, to a certain extent are common. She said a small variance is common at the end of the month. The reason you do an inventory is to match what's in the computerized records with the actual count in the restaurant or store to determine then what needs to be corrected. And when you find corrections, you make them.
So, first of all, it's Justice Richley, but in terms of the facts, if you were to start from an assumption that the record before us is sufficient to create a question of fact about the falsification of those records, where does that leave you in terms of your position in this appeal?
Then on the Pressman case, which provides one of the four exceptions, the falsification of records, it brings us back to the question of, that I was beginning to address at the start of my argument, Your Honor, which is whether the plaintiff here can fit within the narrow exception to the employment at will rule, absent evidence that she was discharged, and indeed absent any evidence that she was constructively discharged.
Okay, so would you agree then that if there was a constructive discharge, and we'll have to work out what that is, but if there were a constructive discharge, then we would be within Pressman, arguably?
I would not, Your Honor. I don't think the courts of this state have gone that far. I've certainly not seen any authority from this court that suggests that the employment at will rule exception should be extended to constructive discharges as well as actual discharges. I would concede that there may be some cases where the conduct is so overreaching that that presents an interesting question for this court to consider. To my knowledge, this court has not considered it yet. I submit that that is not an issue that this court need reach because of the undisputed facts of record in this case relating to these circumstances.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Apart from the fact that Mr. Rizzitiello was not terminated and resigned voluntarily, is there any meaningful distinction between this case and Pressman?
Other than the termination scenario, Your Honor? Well, again, we submit that in Pressman there was abundant evidence that the plaintiff put into the record, both the record pretrial and the actual trial record, as to deliberate falsification.
Well, I don't have a trial record here.
I understand
that. We do have, if one credits the ruling of the court below, a factual dispute. That is a prima facie case that there was not only falsification, but malicious falsification.
The difference in Pressman, Your Honor, as I understand it, is that the plaintiff in that case was able to point to certain specific documents which the plaintiff contended were falsified, in which false information was provided by the plaintiff's manager to others who were involved in the decision-making process. Here, Ms. Rizzitiello has not done that. We asked her in her deposition, can you point to anything in inventory reports or otherwise that you say was falsified? And she could not do that. If I may return, unless there are other questions on this point, to the employment at will exception and what we believe to be the heart of Judge Scott's correct decision below on the constructive discharge question. One of the reasons that the employment at will rule is narrow, again, as this court has noted in all of its decisions on point, Pressman, Schuster, and others, is that there is this balance between the desire to have justice in the workplace, but also some deference to the employer's right to run its business. In that context, courts have been careful to limit their analysis to termination cases. What we have here in this particular case is a scenario in which the plaintiff reacted very precipitously. It's not just a question of did she resign or was she given, as Mr. Weaver called it, a pink slip or fired. But I think it's important, and I submit that it's important, to understand and appreciate the context in which that occurred. The plaintiff was confronted with a statement by a human resources representative or manager that she had food cost issues. She resigned on the spot. She admitted, however, in her deposition that she was well aware that had she not resigned, an investigation would have taken place. And during the course of that investigation, she would have had an opportunity to prove herself. There would have been a review. There would have been an opportunity for her to show that there were no food cost problems. Furthermore, she conceded at her deposition, I asked her if she understood that if she were vindicated, and this is on page B43 of our appendix, Appellee's appendix, she understood that if she were vindicated and it was determined that she had not done anything wrong, whether she would be paid for her lost work time as well as reinstated. And she said, oh, I know that. That's in the handbook. And I said, you knew that's what always happened, right? And she said, yes. And I said, you knew that if you hadn't resigned, the investigation would have continued. And she said, yes. This is a circumstance where Ms. Rizzitiello took this out of the hands of McDonald's. She made it her own decision. By doing that, she made this case particularly inappropriate for judicial review. Again, the crux of the employment at will rule is a narrow device to protect employees from terminations where they've done all they can. It's an interesting contrast with the plaintiff in Schuster. The plaintiff in Schuster was courageous and resisted the alleged sexual advances of her superior. For that, this court noted, she was in the position of the vanguard of the public interest to rid the workplace of sexual harassment and unlawful behavior. What she could not control was her own termination from employment. That was a decision allegedly perpetrated upon her against her will by an employer about which she could do absolutely nothing after she had stood up valiantly to improper advances.
Well, I appreciate your concern for finding the most valiant and courageous employee around, and clearly Ms. Rizzitiello didn't fit that category, but isn't that what we have juries for? That, you know, you paint a picture of somebody who knew that McDonald's was going to have a fair and thorough investigation, and if it turns out that she was fine and had done nothing wrong, she would be reinstated, she could get back pay, she could get Employee of the Month award, I don't know. But you're painting a very favorable picture of a process that you claim would have taken place if she hadn't acted precipitously. From her side of it, as I understand the record, she's expressing dissatisfaction that goes back several months of asking for help and getting none. She has evidence, it may not be evidence that you consider strong, but she has evidence that there was malicious conduct on the part of her superior to get her fired. She then sits down with the appropriate people in authority and expects to be able to talk about this problem with her supervisor and with falsifying her records and so forth, and instead is told, you're suspended, you're through here, you really ought to leave because no matter what, you've got no future here. Now, that may not be what happened, and that would ultimately be what would play out in a trial, and then a jury would decide whether, yes, this was an intolerable situation that it was appropriate for her to walk out of, or no, you know, she decided she had enough, that's her business, but she doesn't have a claim. Isn't that a jury question?
I submit not, Your Honor. There are certain procedural scenarios or quantums of evidence which might support that. If, for example, Ms. Rizzitiello had remained employed during the course of the investigation, and if the investigation had ignored evidence that she could produce, the charges were trumped up against her, and a finding were made against her, and she was then terminated or her suspension continued without pay, we might have a closer question about whether the denial of future promotions in that circumstance is actionable as an exception to the employment at will rule without more. Again, it would be a closer question, but I would submit that the overwhelming weight of authority would be to the contrary. Here, though, she did not do that, and that's why I submit that we should not even be considering a question of whether this is appropriate for a jury. This court has, in crafting exceptions to the employment at will rule, not extended it beyond the termination context, I can only presume for a reason. Employees every day find cause for disagreement with their employers. Every day there is someone who is selected for a promotion and someone who is not. Every day there is someone who is evaluated critically or denied a pay increase or given a pay increase that that person deems unsatisfactory. Every day someone is disciplined. I don't think we want to create, at least I respectfully submit that we should not create a scenario in this jurisdiction where every such employee has not only an ability to file a lawsuit, but an ability to take the resources of our state judicial system and submit to a jury trial. It is an incitement to turning the workplace into a courtroom, and a courtroom into a proxy for the supervisor's decision-making in the workplace. Instead, I believe what this court has done, and what I submit to be prudent, is to say there are certain circumstances where there is no opportunity for that ongoing relationship to resolve itself. When the plaintiff has been terminated involuntarily, or one might ask, perhaps in a constructive discharge scenario, there is no more opportunity for employer and employee to work it out. There is no workplace due process that is possible. Had Ms. Rizzitiello stayed for the investigation that might have taken a week or 10 days, we can only guess, she might have been terminated based on definitive evidence, but she might also have been reinstated. It's interesting that the one person she identified, Ms. Doe, the supervisor, who was suspended 3 years earlier for what Ms. Rizzitiello calls food cost issues, was reinstated and did ultimately get promoted.
doesn't your argument presuppose that there's been no constructive termination?
Yes.
All right. But what if there was?
Well, yeah, don't we have that here?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
Don't we have a prima facie case of constructive termination? And if that is correct, there would not be any unwarranted extension of Pressman or these other cases.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think the cases that, if we review them, there's very little case law from Delaware on constructive termination. But there's a wealth of case law from around the country, from federal and state courts in the employment context. And there is an overwhelming authority. We cite a number of the cases on page 22 of our brief and beyond, saying that the loss of promotional opportunities and an unpleasant situation in the workplace is not enough. After all, Ms. Rizzitello had risen to become a store manager. She had started in a lower job. It is not a constructive termination to keep someone from advancement. Now, there are some cases that have said if someone is repeatedly denied promotions in favor of demonstrably less qualified people, and it happens again and again and again, an actual event as opposed to an abstract fear, in theory, that might be a constructive discharge, but I'm not aware of any cases that have gone so far as to say that actually would be a constructive discharge. And again, for good reason, it's making the current job that the employee is in so intolerable that causes a constructive discharge, not denying advancement. Furthermore, and perhaps I bear the burden or place the burden on the court of my repetition here, for which I apologize, this is a scenario where Ms. Rizzitello not only faced an uncertain future on the promotion question and on the suspension, but had an opportunity to allow the workplace to resolve this. If she had been facing years of a potential challenge internally, again, we might debate, is that so intolerable as to constitute a constructive discharge? I would still submit not. But what happened to her here? The loss of her job was her decision, having acted rashly, not having been terminated. I don't have anything further for the court unless there are other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again for allowing me to appear, Your Honors.
Let me address the question that you left me with when I left the podium, and that is, what causes of action would I like to see go forward on behalf of my client at the trial court level?
Well, not to rephrase your statement, but not what you'd like to see, but what the record shows you would and should have the opportunity to present to a jury.
Understood, Your Honor. And those two causes of action are a breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing based upon a breach which occurred when records were falsified pursuant to Pressman, and a breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing, where the breach occurred because of desperate treatment, a racial discrimination claim, which I believe is born from Schuster. Those are the two causes of action that I believe the record shows should go forward in the trial court below. And a caveat to that is, if I do need to show a termination, as the court below suggests I need to do, then I would not call it necessarily a separate cause of action. But the record, I believe, reflects that I can proceed below to prove constructive termination, because it's pretty clear to me that and I believe the record reflects that there is, in fact, a situation here born over the year 1997 and that completed in 1998 with her handing in her resignation, a situation where it simply was intolerable to work there.
Mr. Weaver, I asked this question of Mr. Banks, namely, how do you establish one distinguish this case from the Pressman case, putting to one side the fact that there was no actual termination. And his response was, in Pressman, there was specific evidence of falsification of documents, whereas here there was not, notwithstanding an opportunity to develop that evidence. What is your response to that?
My response to that is that there is evidence. We had an eyewitness at the scene watching the change in the numbers. She testified as to seeing the change in the numbers. She testified, and when I say testified, she said in her deposition that she asked the question, why are you doing this? And the answer was to create a record to terminate Susan Rizzitello. So Mr. Banks, in his presentation, suggested...
Could you give me the cite in the appendix for that particular statement?
I can. If I may permit it to...
Yeah, well, if it's the only way you can give me the... Please, yes.
In the appendix, it's at page A41.
Thank you.
Quote, I wanted to make sure Sue, and I put in the word Rizzitello, was fired, and that she never came back to the store. All right? Mr. Banks, in his presentation, suggested, well, we go in, we McDonald's goes in and changes numbers so there is an accurate reflection of what the inventory is. Well, then if asked, what are you doing, that's what you say. I'm making certain that the store records are accurate. Well, that's not what this individual said. This individual says, I wanted to make sure Sue Rizzitello was fired, that she never came back to the store.
So your response is that even though there may not be specific itemized evidence of what particular records were changed or falsified, there was a generalized admission on the part of the supervisor that there had been falsification.
In her deposition, she stated, and I believe it was at or about appendix page 841, that is Victoria Haslam, that she could identify certain numbers that were specifically changed. She would not be able to tell you what the number was originally and what it was at the end. But the record is not as fuzzy as made out to be by the defense.
Now, where is it in the record that all of that information was reported to Human Resources before they came in and said, you better leave?
The Susan Rizzitello, in her deposition, stated that she went to Human Resources when she heard that the computer was breached. Somebody went in there and changed the figures on the inventory. And in, my memory is the first week in January, and that she told them at that time.
And three people were involved in this conspiracy to falsify records in order to fire your client?
Yes. The answer is yes. At the computer, Victoria Haslam testified that there were three individuals.
Okay, your time's up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel, for your evidence. We'll take the case under advisement.